Thank you very much, Rabbi Friedman, and for the Seida L'Aderech that we've gotten, the beautiful spread that we had for lunch. Kol HaKavod for this wonderful crowd and for bringing so much Torah and warmth to this community. My second address today really deals with my specialty. I am, once again, a rabbinic coordinator in the head office for the OU in New York City. And my primary responsibility as a rabbinic coordinator is to administrate over commercial bakeries. That's the good stuff I get. And the commercial bakeries that I deal with, I have almost about 120 factories across the world that are making products that you see commonly on your supermarket shelves. Many of the retail products, the familiar brands that you're familiar with, are companies that I administrate over. And as a rabbinic coordinator, I set the policies and procedures for these companies to follow to make sure that our regulations are being adhered to, and as well to make sure that our field representatives who are visiting these facilities are implementing and ensuring maintenance of our policies. So this is my responsibility, and it is a wonderful responsibility. As far as the bakeries are concerned, there are different types of products that we deal with. One on the retail level and the other on industrial levels. But where do we find bakery in the Torah? And I'd just like to give you a little bit of a background. Is there any source for a bakery in the Torah? And I'll venture to say that we actually read about bakeries in Parshas Bereishis. You know who was the first baker? The first baker was Adam HaRishon, Adam himself. What did Adam eat when he was created? Well, God created a lot of natural products for him. Certainly he had a lot of fruits and vegetables to eat from. But our Chazal tell us, actually, that Adam HaRishon ate bread. Where did Adam get the bread from? Was he an experienced baker? So Rabbi Stone says he had a Sobeys in his community. But I'm inclined to think that there was no Sobeys in those times. So the Chazal tell us that the angels actually came down. This is a Torah Chaim. The angels actually came down and created such delightful treats as wine, and they prepared the meat for him, and they gave him bread to eat. But then, as we all know from the story in the book of Genesis, Adam HaRishon sinned, and he ate from the tree of knowledge, which he was not supposed to eat from. And after that sin, he was banished from Gan Eden. And God tells him with these words, "Bizeyas apecha tochal lechem," with the sweat of thy brow, you shall eat bread. And our Chazal say that until that time, Adam was able to delight from bread that the angels were giving him. Not only that, God was even providing bread that grew for by itself from the earth. Can you imagine bread growing from the earth? This is our Chazal tell us. But now Adam had to learn how to bake bread for himself. And the Ibn Ezra over there says, well, what does that mean? He had to make his own flour. He had to grind it, harvest the wheat, mill it. He had to knead the dough. He had to shape the dough. He had to cut it into the right size. And he had to bake it. These are all things that go on in the baking industry. Of course, they're done a little bit more sophisticated today, especially when you deal on a commercial level. But Adam had to learn how to do all these things. And that's when the art of baking began. And when you take a look at the basic staple of life, which is bread, bread is a basic staple of life. We can understand, especially today's day and age, the simple bread that Adam HaRishon ate in those times is really not so simple today. The art of baking has been improved over and over again over the years. And we're dealing with sometimes technology and equipment, which is very highly sophisticated. You just take a look and you go ahead and shop on your shelves. And you pull off a loaf of bread from the shelf. Has it ever occurred to you how come each loaf of bread measures and weighs exactly the same amount? This is no small task. Companies have very sophisticated methods to make sure that they meet government standards, especially weights and measures, so that you, the consumer, are not deprived of what you're paying for. Why should one consumer pay for a loaf of bread which weighs a pound, $1.50, I'm being generous, especially with the way the Canadian dollar is going today, and someone else paying for a loaf of bread, the same loaf of bread, which weighs a little bit less than the pound, okay, $1.50. They're being a little shortchanged. So the government has very exact standards, and companies have very sophisticated methods with their machinery, in making things so that you, the consumer, should get a product which is just right. And I'm here to discuss and let you know and give you some of the ins and outs. Obviously, we don't have that much of time, but give you some kernels on some things that we're looking for to keep pace with the sophistication of bakeries in today's day and age. Well, we always start with ingredients when it comes to kosher. You can't do anything without kosher ingredients. Bread, a basic bread, really only needs only four basic ingredients to make bread. You have flour, water, yeast, and salt. That's it. That's all you need for bread. Flour, water, yeast, and salt. You don't need sugar. A good bread would only have, a real wholesome bread only has flour, wheat, flour, water, yeast, and salt.
Need the salt? Just
and they usually apply the salt. You can probably get along with it without it as well.
I thought the yeast eats the sugar though.
What's that?
The yeast eats the sugar.
There are some sort of reactions between the yeast and the sugar. But a basic bread will only have those. Now, today's day and age, you look at your breads today that you buy, you won't find hardly ever a bread with just flour, water, yeast, and salt. What else will you find in the ingredients of a bread? You're going to find oil. You may find some shortening. You're going to find many preservatives. Okay, calcium propionate. Okay, sodium benzoate. You're going to find emulsifiers, dough, what they call dough conditioners and dough improvers. You're going to find sterile lactylates. All these things are in your breads. Not so simple. But even if you take the basic ingredients to make the bread, those basic ingredients are not so simple either. When you just come to think about them. We have companies that take flour. Flour What problems can there be? Well, for the most part, there aren't too many problems with basic flour. Pure flour usually does not pose any issues. However, sometimes when they buy flour in bulk and they come in a big silo, sometimes you can store up to 10,000 pounds of flour in a big silo, perhaps even more. These trucks come in to make major deliveries, flour deliveries. And they're storing all this flour, and they have to maintain it at proper, improper conditions to make sure the climate is not well so that there should be no infestation in the flour. For the most part, especially the good companies, they have very good sifters. If there's anything in the flour that's not supposed to be there, they have tremendous, huge sifters that are able to separate the non-desired elements. But on occasion, we have had rabbis come in and find a flour bag, or even flour that has been received in bulk. We call these bulk shipments, and found that there has been problems of infestation. So that's one thing that we have to look into. What could be wrong with water? Well, if you live in New York City, there could be plenty wrong with water right now. Thank God you don't have the problem of the coca pods that we're dealing with now in New York, but our policy right now is to have filters in all our companies in New York, at least I think of to the size of 50 microns, to be able to get rid of the coca pods from the water. But Baruch Hashem, here in Edmonton and in factories around this area, we don't have to deal with that type of issue.
Dysentery and cholera in the water?
Well, they have certain filtrations that they use and aqueducts that they come through, right. So we have yeast. What could be wrong with yeast? Well, fresh yeast generally is no problem with fresh yeast. But if it's dried, they have what they call, in order to make a dry pot, they have a spray dryer to take the liquid and make it into a powder. Now, on these many big spray dryers, that they what they do is when they condense the liquid and make it into a powder, they use many other products on that same spray dryer. What will be some of the other products? Well, you can take juice, grape juice, and spray dry the juice into a grape powder. Now, once you use something which is not kosher on the same spray dryer, then if I use something which conceivably is kosher and spray dry the same product, I'm already compromising the status of that second product because it's sharing equipment with product which is not kosher. So you see, even these more comfortable ingredients that we deal with could be problematic. So everything, first and foremost, when it comes to certifying a bakery, we have to make sure that all ingredients meet our standards of approval to our satisfaction. And what we do is we have the company provide a list of their ingredients that they're going to use to make these bread products. And we check over the list and maintain this list, and we let the company know that this is the list that must be followed for all purchasing of ingredients. Okay, that's a little bit more. So we have this list of approved ingredients. We call this a Schedule A. This Schedule A is used by our companies, and this is part of our policy for them to make sure that they receive only kosher approved ingredients. Now, there's another matter when it comes to bread, especially, that has to be looked into for bread to be certified. Bread cannot be certified dairy. It's against kosher dietary law to have dairy bread. Now, the reason for that is because bread is a main staple of life. This is brought down in the Shulchan Aruch, Because bread is a main staple, so bread can be used interchangeably with many different meals. So I could put in my bread, make a sandwich, I can make a sandwich with deli, a deli sandwich. And by the same token, I can make a cheese sandwich with the same bread. Now, if I have bread that has dairy ingredients in it and use that for a deli sandwich, is what's going to happen. I'm mixing now milk and meat together. So it's against kosher dietary law to certify bread which is dairy. We're not allowed to do that. And therefore, we have to maintain, if a company is baking bread, that all the dairies, not only are they kosher, meet our satisfaction kosher-wise, but they also are not dairy. There cannot be any dairy ingredients in this bread.
Is kosher rye bread the best? Kosher rye bread the best?
They say a lot of the kosher rye bread, but Rabbi Stone really knows the best. Yes, Rabbi Stone. Rabbi Stone is the expert in the rye with the deli. So here we have the issue when it comes to bread ingredients. There's another aspect of ingredients which are critical when it comes to a bakery. Knowing exactly what the ingredients are. Let's say we have a bakery which is what we call a mixed plant. Many bakeries, they don't just make bread. They make cakes, they make pastries, they make pies. It makes all sorts of baking goods. And now, you'll have one area of production where they can certify the cakes and the bakery goods as dairy, but the breads can only be certified as hard. So how do we troubleshoot this? What do we do to examine the bakery to make sure that they're using the right ingredients for the right products? We have what we call here an issue of compatibility. What do I mean by compatibility? We have a company that makes chocolate chip bagels. That may be a popular variety. People like chocolate chip bagels. Or a pesto bagel. We deal with pesto bagels. The real pure pesto has an Italian origin and uses real cheese to make the pesto sauce. Now, we have, as Rabbi Stone had eloquently explained before, a whole industry of flavors. You can make an imitation pesto, which is not dairy. And the imitation pesto can be used to make a parve bagel, a parve pesto bagel. But on the other side, we have to make sure that the plant only orders for their bagels the parve variety, because they can only use parve for the breads. On the other side of the place, they're making some sort of Danish, or they're making a cookie with chocolate chips. And the chocolate chips are certified dairy. What guarantee is there that they're not going to use the dairy chocolate chips that they're using for their cookies and use them to make the chocolate chip bagel, which is supposed to be parve? It's the same chocolate chip. How do we know what system can we create to ensure that they're not going to mix up the cookie line for this ingredient, which use only dairy chocolate chips, and they're not going to use the same chocolate chips or a dairy pesto to make a parve bagel or a parve chocolate chip bagel? So what we do is we look at all areas of production in a bakery. We may only be certifying the breads, the cookies, and the cakes. But we look at everything the bakery is doing. And we have to see all the ingredients that they're using for all their products. And this way, we're able to discern and distinguish and let them know if there are any ingredients that we think can be interchanged for the products that we are certifying. So let's say in this case they're using chocolate chips to make cookies. We will let them know, if you want to certify the chocolate chip bagel, you can only use Parv chocolate chips even in your cookies. And if you want to certify a pesto bagel, you can only use a Parv pesto, even though the pesto is being used in your cake. The pesto that's being used for the cake must also be Parved. Or if you're using, we were talking about things that can be, that are likely to become Parv and dairy. Rabbi Stone masterfully described to you non-dairy creamers that are real dairy. Well, there are margarines and shortenings. You'll find out in the market, you'll buy a margarine that's OUD. And even a mayonnaise that's OUD. Because they also have casein and also milk proteins. So what's going to be if a company uses a shortening that's dairy to make their cookie, and they also use shortening to make their bread? We will let them know that if you're using shortening in this plant, all shortening must be Parv in order to certify the breads as Parv. Because we don't want there to be any interaction between what's going on in the cookie end of the bakery and in the bread end of the bakery. We try to eliminate, what we're doing here is we're eliminating all compatible ingredients. So this is very important that we do this in order to maintain our program to ensure the best quality and the best kosher certification of Parv breads and dairy pastries. There are other areas of concern when it comes to a bakery, when it comes to production. Now here in production, it's important, key, actually, it's a very key thing to understand all areas of production when it comes to the making of bread and the making of the pastries. We usually start off with the mixing and the batching in a scale room. So in the scale room, the workers are weighing the flour, and they're weighing the salt, and they're weighing, could be sodium bicarbonate, baking soda, and baking powder. And they could be using flavors, which is high in demand. And they're using all these good things to make their products. And then sometimes the flour can be coming in bulk into they're being programmed. Actually, most of these places are very sophisticated. They're even being programmed and being delivered through a delivery system through the top, coming in through a sifter into big mixers and blenders, and then it becomes mixed with the water when it forms the dough, and the dough comes down the chute and it's being extruded and shaped and being cut into size. And in this same areas of production, we have other things that are going on. We have to understand that if they're breads that are coming down one area of production, the same equipment would not be able to be used for dairy cookies or dairy cakes. Because once we use equipment that is what we call sheared. If we have sheared equipment between the breads and the cookies and the cakes, we're already compromising the status of one product of the and the other. So all areas of production have to, what we call, we try exclusively to maintain them as designated and devoted areas that are designed for only certain areas of production. So if you have equipment for bread, we understand that that equipment will not be used for the cookies and the cakes. And if you have let's say, other areas as well, where we have, sometimes we can certify cheesecakes. Now the cheesecakes, they can be used with cream cheese, which is obviously, well, cooked, obviously dairy. Okay, and now we want to use this same cream cheese on the same equipment which is being used to bake the cakes. What about the ovens? We have to make sure that the ovens that are used to bake the breads, which are parv, cannot be used by the cream cheese, by the cheesecakes, which are used. Our policy in the OU is not to share ovens that are parv and dairy. There are certifying agencies that rely on leniency called Tanner Gadol, which is literally means big oven, and they would actually bake dairy and parv in the same ovens. Our policy is to have designated ovens for parv and separate ovens for dairy. So if there's a parv product, you know it's being made exclusively in a parv oven. And if it's a dairy product, it's exclusively being made in a dairy oven. And we don't rely on this leniency of Tanner Gadol. So we have separate, let's say we have separate ovens. And there's no shared equipment. But there are different types of ovens that we should know about. And it's important for us to be aware of the different types of technology that's being used and machinery that's being used to make these products. There are tunnel ovens, there are rack ovens, there are revolving shelf ovens. All these are very important to know about, because how am I to ensure, let's say I am baking a cheesecake in a rack oven, on one side of the manufacturing plant. Now when I use these racks, what happens? I take the ingredients and I fill up the pans with the ingredients to make the cake, a loaf pan, let's say for instance. And it has the cake batter in it. And I have on this rack, I have sheet pans, which we use. And we put the sheet pans on top, on the rack. Sometimes 24 pans can fit on a single rack. And you wheel the pan, you wheel the rack into the oven. And the oven spins around and it bakes the cake. Now on the other side of the factory, I have rack ovens that are baking breads. And what are they doing? These are using now bread loaf pans. And I'm baking and I'm putting these loaf pans on these racks and wheeling them into the oven. What guarantee is there that I'm not going to use the racks that I use to bake the dairy cakes or the pans that I use to bake the dairy cakes and not use them to bake the dairy, the parv breads? How am I to ensure that I'm not going to mix up one end of production with the next? So just like we had a question of compatible ingredients, here we have a question of compatible equipment. So we have to make sure, this is all things that we try to troubleshoot, to make sure that there will not be any equipment that looks exactly the same. Now in our kitchen at home, we have this issue all the time. We keep a kosher home, and we have one side for our fleishigs, meat, and another side for milchigs, for dairy. Now, you know that you're not going to use a dairy spoon, and you're not going to use that dairy spoon to stir a soup, a chicken soup pot. How do you know you're using the right spoon? So the answer is we have a design on the spoon. The spoon has a design. I know that the design of the spoon that I'm using is dairy, and it's not used for meat. Now, we do this, we have dishes in our kitchen that are used for, thank you very much, We have dishes in our kitchen that are used for dairy and dishes that are used for fleishigs, for meat, and some that are designated for parv. Each one has a different design on it. So we know what's supposed to be used for what. They're all designated. When you have a big factory, a big company, it's not good enough even to paint, usually. Sometimes you can paint one area blue for the dairy pastries, and then you can paint another area yellow for your breads. But you think these workers really care? What's going to stop a worker from taking a dairy pan used to bake dairy cakes and use it to, in this instance, to bake the parv bread? Now you're going to say that, well, they're located on different ends of the factory. But we have to monitor this and make sure that there's not going to be any crossover between one end of production, one end of the factory, and the other end of the factory. So what's good for us in the kitchen is not good generally for things that are done on a commercial level. Sometimes it's not even good enough for things that we do institutionally, in a big synagogue, a nursing home, and a restaurant. Many a times labeling and creating the right signs on equipment is good enough, but many a times it's not satisfactory. So what we do is we try to ensure that all the equipment that is used is incompatible. In other words, you're not going to fry an egg in a soup pot. That's ridiculous. You're not going to fry an egg in a soup pot. And as well, you're not going to bake a cake in a frying pan. We don't do those things. That's not natural. So what we do is when we organize kosher certification, we do it in a way that a company will not be able to use equipment for something which is unnatural. For instance, there are different types of rack ovens. There's a single rack oven, and there's a double rack oven. What's the difference between a single rack oven and a double rack oven? A single rack gets one, you wheel in one rack at a time. A double rack, you wheel in two. You cannot fit the same pans that fit on a single rack will not be able to fit on a double rack. It's impossible. It's just impossible. Physically impossible. So therefore, if we certify a product, let's say they're making breads in one end, and they're making cakes and dairy cakes in another end, we will ensure that the cakes are designated. One has one end, one is designated with one, and one's designated with the other. So there'll be no issues whatsoever of them actually interchanging one for the next. It's virtually impossible to do that. Or if, let's say, we're dealing with a line, a conveying line, where the dough is being cut and conveyed in a tunnel oven. Sometimes you have these huge tunnel ovens, which are 300 feet, which have 10 different zones, with different temperatures in each zone. So what happens when I convey dough, I have a bread oven, and I have a cookie oven. A dairy cookie oven. What's going to stop them from using the cookies in the bread oven? And the answer is, because in order to convey the cookie dough in the bread oven, cookies can only have to be made with certain molds to shape the cookies. Those molds can only be connected to the cookie line. They cannot be connected to the bread line. It's virtually impossible. So you could not make the cookies in the bread oven. It's just an impossibility. And that's the way we control to make sure that the dairy cookies maintain their dairy status and the bread, parv breads, can maintain their parv status as well. We set it up in such a way, not just by marking them and coloring them, But so that there should not be an accident. We try not, many times you come to a company, and I don't know if Rabbi Stone will agree with me here, but we've heard this quite often. Companies call, the kosher police is here today. And we tell our people, it says, we're not here to police over you. It says, the best thing we can do to ensure kashrus on the highest level is to partner with you. So we're partners in this endeavor. And the worst thing you can do for kosher supervision and kosher certification is to be a policeman. That's the worst thing. Because then it's an accident to happen. And most likely, the kosher supervision will be undermined. But if they understand, the company understands, that we have kosher certification, we have areas that are designated, that there's not going to be any crossover between one area and the next, and they understand the system quite well, and they know that we're working together with them, then you know that you have a great kosher supervision and that the certification is doing quite well. So that is an area that we look at, compatible ingredient and compatible equipment. And what about compatible packaging? There are sometimes companies that have multiple factories to make their products. One single company can have 20 factories across the world to make a product. Sometimes these companies have the same product being made in one factory, in three or four different factories. Now, we certify kosher one factory. Let's say we're certifying a cookie, and we get this call from consumers often. We had a cookie here, an Oreo cookie that was kosher. And then all of a sudden, we picked up another Oreo cookie that we did not see the OUD. How come the one had the kosher and the other did not have the kosher? Well, there are different answers to this question. It could be the company just forgot to put the kosher symbol on. In other instances, we may be supervising or certifying only one factory, and we're not certifying the other factory. So we try to, in our best, if at all possible, whenever we certify a product, and we know this product, we have to find out, first and foremost, is the product being made anyplace else? The same exact product. We get that information. Once we know that information, we try our best to certify and supervise all locations that are making that product. It's not always possible to do that. So what we do is we devise a way in order to make sure that the packaging, so that you, the consumer, should be able to tell the difference between what's kosher certified and not kosher certified. We try to make the packaging as different as possible, so they should not look alike. Either the graphics are different, the color is a little bit different. So there could be many distinctions, so that you'll see something on the shelf which may be kosher now, but it has the same name, but it's totally different, has a totally different color, totally different graphic. Unfortunately, there are products out there that we're familiar with. We're trying to get them. We do have what we call this parallel product. They have the same packages. Okay, sometimes they're coming out from different plants. Some are certified and some are not certified. And we're able to track it down, what we call lot codes on the product. These sophisticated companies, they have what they call lot codes. They do is they laser jet print the lot code on the package to ensure that it's coming out from the proper facility. These lot codes we're able to determine from which factory the product is being made. They need it in order for their government requirements. God forbid there's a problem with the product health-wise, and they want to recall the product. How is it that they're able to track down the product and say, well, this product was made in such and such place, on such and such production line, at such and such time? They're able to do that to the second. The reason is because they put on these lot codes. Now, it's not the UPC that we see on the back. Sometimes you'll see an alphanumeric code. They'll have letters and they'll have numbers, which are like stamped on. Those are the codes that we're looking at. And that's the way we're able to tell if it's coming out from the proper kosher facility or not. So if you do see an item which doesn't have a kosher symbol on it, and you bought the same item the past week, and it did have the kosher symbol, the best thing is to call our office, and we'll be able to determine if, in fact, the product came from the proper kosher facility, or if it came from another factory which was not kosher supervised. So that is always the best avenue to take. We have a hotline to call. We have someone manning that hotline, and he'll get the information for you in a timely manner. So here we got issues of, we have ingredients, different types of ingredients. Now there are all different types of ingredients that are being used. We have equipment, shared equipment, compatible equipment. But what's essential here is to know all facets of the production when it comes to ingredient, equipment, and packaging in order to size up what is kosher certifiable and what is not kosher certifiable. Now, this is done on a grand scale. But Baruch Hashem, communities here like in Edmonton, we are very impressed. You have bakery, pizza shop, Chol of Yisroel, Pas Yisroel, beautiful shiur and beautiful Torah that you bring here. Really such stuff that you could be really very proud of. Sometimes the issues that have to be addressed when it comes to a smaller community are a little bit different than when it comes to addressing issues on a more commercial level. Because when it comes to, let's say, a small bakery, we've seen places where they use the same board, kneading board. They'll knead the bread on top on one end, and then they'll turn the board over to knead the cake. Now what happens is, in that type of situation, sometimes you've got substance, let's say dairy substance, which is used on the one end to knead the dairy dough, and then they'll knead the parve dough. Sometimes they'll get caught on the other end, on the bread end. So there has to be a good system in place in order to ensure again that there's no interaction here, in this case between parve and dairy, and other situations as well. Overall, if you have something which is totally parve, ideally something totally parve is an ideal situation. Something totally dairy is also an ideal. But there's no reason why we cannot make something dairy and parve if the proper systems are in place. And Baruch Hashem, we have a core here which received Kol HaKavod, Rabbi Friedman, for bringing us to a new high level in the Edmonton community. And for raising the heights and raising awareness about kashrus and kosher and Torah in all areas which relate to kosher life. And we just give you our brachas and our tzlacha for continued mazel and success. And thank you so much for conducting this seminar.